Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the I Get Buckets podcast. My name is Simon. I'm your host, as always, and we are trying to rip through the end of season team reviews 2026. It's been a while now since we've got on. Trying to do it as basketball is still fresh. As long as the playoffs is still going, I think people's minds are still in basketball, but I think we've forgotten very clearly about a whole bunch of teams and players. So we're going to flashback, get back into that zone and kind of talk about the two teams today. I want to talk about are the teams that finished top. So the ones that really looked like the standout kind of candidates across the year. We had Dan in his first season with us. And we had Adam, who had been looking to get back into a position to win, and he was really, really right there. Both teams looking really good, competitive, strong drafting, strong pickups, but just kind of went wrong at the worst time. I think both teams doing a straight sets exit, part of it kind of coming up against teams in form, part of it their form really waning at the wrong time, injuries having to do a lot of it, I think, with especially Adam, but as well with kind of Dan and some of the things going through. So it's going to be a fun one. We're going to get back in the zone. I've got four teams left, maybe even six, actually. I've done four. So after this one, we'll still have four to go. So a couple of podcasts. Had forgot a little bit that I had these still to do, but a little bit of time, decided don't want to go to gym today. Well, this is early in the morning before I clock on for work. Kids at childcare before. We've got game one, Detroit versus Cavs later on. So that'd be an interesting one. But yeah, sacrifices I'm making for the pod. P.S. Much rather be doing this than going to gym. Easy kind of sell for me there. I wanted to get back in the mind frame and talk about all the players that we saw on Dan and Adam's team. So yeah, going to be fun ones. I think most of what we saw was with the teams being so competitive and the kind of the bar throughout the regular season, Dan finishing with a record of 15 wins and 3 losses throughout the season. So we'll start with his team. Was the newbie doobie doo. First season with us, not a fantasy noob. I think head-to-head format might be a little bit different. I think the categories is what the staple is with a couple of the other leagues, but not 100% across it, but not a fantasy noob. What was to say, I think, you know, unfortunately not with us on the night, out of his control, with a pre-existing golf trip plan. So suds were had. I think he did a really good job, I think, to log in and do a lot of his drafting, how many down after a round of 18 or whatever it was. So good job. But I think very clearly we saw the draft come together for him quite well. I think picking at pick 5, which he did, was the best spot to be. It's because this margin of errors that we're talking about. I think 6 was the worst place you didn't want to do. 5 is amazing because I think there's the clear 5. We say it again. You just take who's there. And Luka Doncic kind of falling to him at that point was absolutely fine. I had him, you know, and I've said before, a real toss-up between him and Giannis at pick 2 this year, and I thought Luka was a real interesting one to kind of lean towards. So I kind of pushed and advocated that you could really take Luka at 2 to get him at 5 here. Yeah, you'd be celebrating, I think, big time with that one. He ended up being 2nd in the league on average and in total points. So that's where it sits. I think it's just a real staple that to get someone like Luka and in all kind of respects be as good on par, better in the end than the Shea, Giannis and Wemby picks that were the kind of the ones that people were tossing up beforehand. It's just an easy position to be in, and you just kind of catapult from there because on the back end you get the first look before these other teams that have gone. And I think Devin Booker on the other end, it's funny because this is, you know, 3rd, 4th, 5th year in a row, you Devin Booker's like, okay, fine. Average of 26.8. I always have him in this kind of mid second round, expecting a bit of a leap. This year, you know, the Suns are gotten rid of Durant. I guess the expectation was it's all kind of on Devin Booker a little bit. They have a, you know, surprisingly successful season to kind of get through to playoffs and do quite well. But that Devin Booker rise from, like, you know, star to elite just still hasn't kind of happened. So I think when you look at the averages and everything, kind of Devin Booker getting that 26.8 really puts him down closer to kind of your 30th best player, even less here. He's about 38, you know, in your best average. So I think in that kind of gap, when you say you took him at 16, it's nothing but it's not the best pick, ideally. But I think when you just kind of stack it up, to have Devin Booker with you week to week, I know he was a little bit injured on some things, but overall, you know, it's not something that kind of super hurts you. I think you just bank in someone of that talent who you know can go on big on certain nights, but it's just when you look at where you could have had, you know, minor improvements. The fact that Devin Booker still, year after year, haven't taken this, like, leap. Well, I'm going to push that average to a 30 in fantasy. And I'm at the point now where I just don't know if it's ever going to happen. So I'm interested next year where people go with Devin Booker, because I think there's just guys that have leapfrogged him. When you look at Paolo Banchero, I guess to a lesser extent Mobley, but then Jalen Johnson, Maxi, you know, even Josh Giddey, are these guys that have all kind of gone ahead of him in a fantasy aspect. Like, it sounds silly of Josh Giddey, but Josh Giddey averaged 27.6. He was a better fantasy player than Devin Booker this year, and I just don't think, whether it's, you know, the counting numbers that kind of puts him up, we all know he's the scorer, but the ability, I think, you know, to go 8 assists, 8 rebounds kind of nights, where you see here, season stats, 4 rebounds a game, 6 assists, you know, nearly a steal a game, but it's not good enough if you want to pick him, I think, this high. And I had him, this was the pick to go. I know we're in the room on draft night. He wasn't there, but everyone, I think Jake was like, he'll take Devin Booker. This is an easy pick for him as a Suns fan. I get you, it's fun to kind of get your guys and root for them. That's a whole good element of fantasy I don't think can be underrated, is drafting guys that you like to watch. Part of it, but through the lens of, it's an interesting conversation that Devin Booker that we keep repeating, and I just, maybe that next gear is just not there as much as we think he could. Like, he's a guy that should be in these all NBA conversations every year, but it just feels like he hasn't cracked that that barrier ever since, I think, you know, the Suns went to the finals. So interesting one with that one. I think Chet Holmgren is another one that you'd love to have a next step, and I looked at him and said, this is the time to take him. I think it's a good spot. Maybe that leap is here in the first week, I think, of basketball for the season. He had a couple of really big games. You're like, oh, here we go with Chet. But I think, you know, he stayed healthy. He showed, you know, glimpses of that. It was interesting, the discourse around him during the year was like, oh, well, he has this stretch of, like, you know, 10 games or so where he just didn't hit 20 points. He averaged 17 for the season, but that's where you want him to go, I think, next. I liked him here. I think he produced for you, but again, he's similarly to the Devin Booker, where you take him at 25, and then on the end of the average, he's about 5 below, so about 42 on average overall. So I think there's just minor kind of erosion for these two players stepping down, but a fact that I think they were on the court a lot of the time, kind of putting up these numbers consistently, it's not something that's hurt you, and you saw over his season, you know, 15-3, that they just kind of banking in these guys and the other players around him that elevated their game, really just made him this, like, beast. And his floor was so high, like, I think with the scoring, there was no real, like, off weeks until I think one of his worst weeks was at the very end, potentially, whether it was against me off the bye or against Dobes, he just couldn't kind of get it together. But the floor was so high because, you know, a Booker and Chet, while they could have been better, they really kind of delivered, you know, this top, you know, 35 to 45 value. And where it helps is when you nail the next pick with Scottie Barnes. So he was just amazing. Scottie Barnes pick round, I think it was round 3 a couple years ago. And then I think similarly, so he's dropped because he had a bit of a rough year last year. So that was for me, even though, you know, he went on to win it at law, I think it was like early round 3 that I take him, and he just kind of fell apart. His average of 28 this year, the eye test was so much better with him in everything, and it'd be interesting where the Raptors go. But I mean, I think he added a little bit to his scoring. The efficiency was kind of up. You know, the assists at six a game feel really healthy. His counting numbers, he's 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks a game. The usage rate was just kind of through him, and it just felt really easy, I think, for him. And we've seen him, and I don't know if he'll finish like an All-NBA third team or something like that, but I'd be surprised if he didn't, just because he did so much this year. So I think with Scottie Barnes, because where you go with him in his average is right up there. We'll find it in a second, but he's just kind of elevated his game so much that, yeah, he's in that kind of just outside the top 20. So he's, and when you kind of do points, you know, he vaults over guys like Tatum, Markkanen, and Kessler, who just like kind of didn't play. So when you put him in the points category for the team for the year, yeah, he's seven. So that's just how good he was. An average that kind of was around that 25. But, you know, on the court, doing it all, vaulting up, yeah, seven. So outside of kind of, you know, the mainstays guys is really, you know, Durant and Jalen Johnson, the only other two other than the elite guys that were ahead of him. So, you know, he pipped Tyrese Maxey in the end in points coming in at the end of the season. So just a fantastic all-round pick. I think, again, people are gonna vault him up a little bit. So I'll be interested to see where he goes next year. But I wouldn't be super surprised if he's, you know, a late round two, kind of early round three guy, just because I think the consistency and the role and everything's there for Toronto with Scottie Barnes. So it just kind of really put his team together. Miles Bridges is probably the first miss. And again, I think because his team, these misses weren't horrific. They were fine. It was just like in the context of everything, you know, an average of 20 at a pick 45 is much more around the kind of that top 100 just average mark. So it hurts you, but you know, he was playing all the time, consistent, a lot of the things. It's just the emergence of Con Knipple, the fact that Brandon Miller came through as well. You know, you've drafted him as the second best Hornet, and really he kind of fell to be, you know, the fourth. So the pecking order, I think, has just kind of been established a little bit with Miles, and it's just that usage. Like the 2 years ago, even 3 years ago, when he kind of came on a little bit more with what we saw, it was because the Hornets were just kind of leaning on him so much. Coming back from suspension, there was a few issues, and they're just like, well, straight away, here's 36, you know, minutes a game, and he did it all. So I think this year was the year maybe to be a little bit wary of him. But, you know, an average of 20 means he's still a big part of the rotation for you. And again, where he's elevated and put it all together was, you know, Michael Porter Jr. next. So the whole thing with him was like, oh, well, he's going to Brooklyn. He's like their best player. He's just going to get all the shots and all the touches. And it did. It all came together like that. The question marks on him was like, well, what's the big picture thought? You know, Brooklyn are probably going to tank because, you know, this is their last shot at it. Now, you don't own their pick next year or to pick swap with Houston. So, you know, what are we looking at in, you know, the last 5-6 weeks of the season? What are we looking at the deadline? I think unfortunately, it does kind of pan out where he gets shut down towards the end and misses playoffs. So that really kind of hurts. But it's hard. That happened to so many players, and some of it's just hard to read. Michael Porter, it seemed a little bit more obvious, but there was an injury that, like, was hampering him. And just it's a lot easier for the team, I think, to turn these potentially 1 to 2 week injuries into a month and shut him down, is what we saw across the board. But I think in isolation, that he was so good and important for his regular season record during the year. The fact that you picked, you know, a guy at pick 56 who is just a really solid kind of average guy that comes through here about. He's just after Devin Booker. So 39th in average. I think it's just you've kind of done really well. And there was these weeks where he was going better than that. Like that average has dipped a little bit because there was some weeks where he, you know, if you remember a lot of the All-Star buzz, he was like one of the biggest snubs for the East, you know, in terms of a team that was down the bottom. So he was doing amazing, I think, to kind of prop him up. And, you know, I watched a little bit of him, obviously, and I think again and again, I say every season, just the shot is just, you know, one of the best in the league in terms of the form, and he's high and he can shoot over people, and it's catch and shoot, it's pull up, it's corner, it's, you know, off the break. It's just everything's kind of there. So the fact that he had such a green light, you know, he's getting to the rim, he was doing all the stuff that just kind of felt really nice. So be interested, because they feel like he's, you know, a piece. They're not going to trade him, they say, just for like nothing. Like he's part of what they want to do in the next few years. He's not too old. His contract is obviously expensive, but kind of it's not lengthy. I think he's only got another year of it. So it'd be interesting moving forward. But I think Michael Porter, you can't say anything other than like he's nailed the pick here. I think it was smart to read him kind of leaping up, and he's done really good. And the DeAndre Ayton one is just a real confusing. So he lands with an average of 20. You pick him at 65. So yeah, again, that, you know, that's around kind of your 90 to 110 mark with your average. So again, it's okay. It's not a huge whiff, but I don't know who else was really interested in DeAndre Ayton. I know because he got he went to the Lakers and they didn't have a center. There was just like role above everything, but you had to try to talk yourself out of the fact that, you know, Phoenix kind of weren't stoked on him by the end. Portland basically paid to get rid of him. It was just a real stank on him. And I think overall it was not a fail or a pass or just a pass probably. Like it wasn't a huge thing. But in fantasy aspects, you know, and I know he was – coach was probably done by the end of the season knowing he could put up a, you know, a 10 or a 32. But it was much more kind of around those teen marks. Just didn't score the ball as much and kind of left a bit of a stank on it all. So that's where you probably, you know, if you have your time again, so go somewhere different. But, you know, for the third time now, he's gone off, you know, guys who are like, oh, yeah, okay, a little bit less, bang into Scotty Barnes who helps him. Miles Bridges, oh, yeah, it's fine, but it doesn't play. Michael Porter Jr. props him up. This time he's gone on Onyeka Okongwu in round 8, so picked him at 76, and you know, he's got an average of 22.9, but that feels low compared to, I think, some of the output he was getting from him. Drops him accidentally in December, but team's good enough to let him pick him back up. I just thought he was fantastic. Yeah, the three was added to the game. I just thought there was real kind of weeks where he was putting, you know, triple figures on guys when he had, you know, four games and was just putting it together. I really, really kind of liked his game. The idea of him kind of cementing himself in kind of that center role, I think really came through strong. It's interesting. I thought Atlanta really missed Jock Landau in playoffs, and it was a bit of a dirty foul where he was pulled down and kind of rolled his ankle and then missed basically the rest of the season, which was unfortunate. But before that and everything around Onyeka kind of having this kind of center role, be able to stretch the floor, worked really, really well. So I just think that was a really good, savvy, smart pick. He goes one before Julius Randle, which obviously Julius Randle would have been a much better move, but he goes two after Jakob Poeltl, which was just a disaster. A few after kind of an Asar Thompson, who was, you know, not as good. So I think he's done really well with this pick here. Bit of a like out there. It wasn't a home run or a conclusion that he was going to be that good. So I think it was a bit of a risk there that's kind of paid off. I think Nembhard, again, like I liked the idea. I liked the areas. He puts up an average that makes it feel pretty good. From memory, he misses a chunk of time here, there. The Indiana thing was weird. But I mean, the idea was with no Tyrese Haliburton, this is where you go. And I think that was smart drafting. When he was on the court, he was a big kind of factor for him. His probably biggest miss is Ace Bailey next. Not because he's a bad read. I remember coming out of the preseason games and I was like, well, after Cooper, I think Ace is the guy in terms of the rookie class that I want. You had a couple of those ones where you saw the moves, you saw the scoring, and like, I think he's going to start straight away. Utah, there were real question marks from, you know, Keontae George, who we'll get into, but even otherwise, like on their depth, like who's going to go where. So I thought it was the right like areas and ideas for Ace Bailey. Early in the end, really, really struggled to start. Couldn't own him, had to get dropped. So it becomes a zero for you as a pick 96 here. So it really kind of hurts with, you know, there's guys like Buzelis and McCollum and Cligon all going in like the next five picks that'd be interesting if you could have added them either. But I think you kind of, again, pick up the slack later by grabbing George and kind of handcuffing him to you because George is this like emergence. And they play different players. Ace, I was interested. I thought he, you know, he might be more of a kind of handling the ball, but I think he works really well kind of cutting and moving off ball and that kind of wing defender. I think that maybe that is where he's going to go. And maybe late in shot clock, they get to him and you kind of, okay, you can isolate and work these guys. But it was really like him being off the ball a lot more, which I think started to kind of suit him towards the end of the year. So he's a really interesting one moving forward. A guy that I ended up adding, you know, got his jersey, which I'm ready to unleash on draft night again. But yeah, it becomes a zero because it was super hard to own early, you know, churning out probably a couple of negatives and also kind of single digits for his first five or six games before I think missing a little bit of time. So he was an easy drop at the moment you had him. But yeah, came back to kind of play all right in playoffs, which is a hard pill, but probably the right decision. Keller Ware, I don't, out of all of the players that are drafted, all 150 that we take, he might be one of the more confusing ones. Ends in an average of 99.8. So, you know, you take him at 105. That's basically around where his average sits. His rotation things get pulled all over the place. It's funny, these scores are from when the season ended, but you open up in his docket and he's got a 50.75 against Washington, which, you know, let's put that in perspective. But that's how big he could go. And then like a couple games later, he's got a 9.5 and plays 11 minutes. The whole thing with him and Bam was hard to get a read from week to week. I think Spoelstra didn't like playing him together. You know, tried little spurts of it. Doesn't think he likes his positioning on the floor. And while he's a really good rim protector, like I think sometimes it's overzealous on trying to chase blocks and leaving his man and not rotating and things that get under the skin of Spoelstra. And I think his offense is still a bit of a work in progress, even though he's shown he can do a few different things. So I think it's a real, I don't know where that's going from here. Because if he stays in the role with Miami, I don't think there's any real kind of confirmation that he's just going to continue kind of his growth, even though we see this kind of raw, interesting fantasy player at the center position. The Bam thing, I think, as long as it's there, puts a cap on his ceiling. But I think I said it a couple of times. We got to round 11. There's a bunch of centers that were really interesting for me, Klingon, Lively, and Ware being the three of them. And they all go within five picks of each other. And Lively, we didn't really get to see because of injury. But Keller Ware looked like the better of them at the start and then just kind of went to a weird spot and would pop his head up every now and then. Don't know where we're going with Keller Ware. I've got him down as my like Ware 2 player for the review, which is something that I only came up with looking at Ware because that this just kind of signifies it all. So, yeah, who knows? The Keyonte George is his next pick that got kind of just pieces it all together. So you look back at people who are winning championships in fantasy, and they usually have a guy who's getting picked after the 10th round that just vaults up to like top 50 value. It just makes such a big difference. And Keyonte George was that guy this year. I said it in when we first did kind of the draft reviews of, I didn't know where to put him and he burnt me so bad last year and saw some signs that I'm like, I think they're just moving kind of past what I thought he was going to be. Like is Isaiah Collier their starting point guard? Is Ace Bailey then on the wing? And then they're going with a few other, his shooting was horrifically bad statistically. I remember seeing like a stat thing and there was like him and Brandon Jennings for like the worst effective percentage field goal for people who like shot over like 15 attempts a game or something like that. So it was in those mark of being horrific. So I got him like, oh, I'm not sure if he's like a end of draft flyer or not. But you know, his real double down, Isaiah Collier was hurt at the start of the season. Not sure how much that kind of paved the way for him just getting in, but he started and they obviously, I think, would have seen in-house his progression, and it came to the front, everything that I had hoped for him, drafting him 2 years in a row previously on thinking, you know, he's a guy who can get to the rim. His scoring is, you know, three-leveled in terms of catch and shoot and pull up and kind of, you know, getting off the ball and getting it back as well. So I just think he's fast. You know, he's this new age kind of like point guard, put your head down, but has that kind of shooting there. The assists were up. Everything just felt really good about him. Again, kind of missed the end of the season, which really hurts you, which was a theme across this podcast on Utah guys. But just an absolute complete home run, a guy that averages in the end 25.7, which puts him at 43 in his average. So you're 43 kind of best player average-wise that you're getting at 116. It's just this huge, huge kind of leap. And I think you can kind of throw a net. We talk a lot about, or I talk a lot about the average, but the difference between like, you know, your 25th best player and your 50th best player in average is, you know, like two a game. So, you know, the difference between a Keontae George's average and an Austin Reeves, you know, it's not really that big, a 25.7 to a 27. So, you know, this is the pool that he's swimming in this year. Keontae George in his average was, you know, up there. Really in that kind of like second, maybe like third bracket of guys. So, yeah, nailed it. I think the Pods pick was interesting at the time. Doesn't stick with him, but he's a guy that bounced around three or four different teams. So, you know, interesting swing. Jonas Valanciunas doesn't pave out, and his last pick, Yves Missi, which I thought was a really good pick, but they didn't really start him at the start, and then he kind of was all over the place. It ended up falling out. So, you know, if anything, his last three picks, he hasn't really added to himself. But, you know, I think he got Harkez Jr. in free agency, which nailed. Stick with him all year, you know. Sixth man of the year kind of shortlist guy. And Jeremy Grant, as much as kind of you can be a bit down on him overall, I think he was like a serviceable free agency guy that kind of held it together a little bit. So, I think overall, just like a hugely successful season. I think his best pick has to be Keontae George, sprinkled with a little bit of, you know, Scotty Barnes. Worst pick, as I said, was Ace Bailey. The surprise is Keontae, and the where to is where. Injuries a big part of it. You know, Luka did miss some time. Not as much. He still finished second in the league, but, you know, Porter Jr. misses at the end. Nembhard's all over the place. So I think moving forward, just like really, really solid season. Can't really ask for too much more apart from, you know, getting it together at the right end. That has to feel, you know, a bit rough because he was just so strong, dominating a 15 wins, 3-loss record, as I said. So it's a shame that he couldn't, you know, bring it together at the end. But in terms of a bar from himself in his first season, he set it quite high. And I think the homework and next season's goal would just be like, oh, well, let's get back to playoffs. Let's draft in person. Let's get the vibes with the guys and see if I can win a playoff game next season. So that'll be it for him. So I think he's got a really good platform for what he wants to do moving forward. So great, great season. Can't be understated how good he was with some of those stuff. But we can move on to Adam's team now, the Obituaries, in a very similar vein to Dan. Had a great regular season, ended up 13 wins and 5 losses. But I think just did so well in a number of areas. Two areas that do stand out were free agency and his trades. I think he did really well with those. We'll get through to his draft kind of guys, but I think he just smartly added free agents at the right time. I think, you know, Ryan Rollins was really good for him. He added Peyton Watson, who was amazing for him stretches. Derek Queen, who she picked up at the right time, was able to kind of flip in a trade to upgrade to Ingram. And Sadiq Bey as well, kind of my boy, just – really putting a stamp on, hey, don't forget about me, you know, came back from an ACL and was really, really important for the Pelicans. For some people, you know, thinking as a bit of an afterthought, to add him there. And timing wise, I think for everything, it was bad luck and rough, because I think he did as much as he kind of could and then he just kind of fell apart. You know, he lost his last two of the season and then lost in straight sets. I think that's maybe the second straight sets lost in a row, potentially, from memory. So I think he's got a bit of a playoff thing that he wants to kind of buck. But it's hard to kind of look at what he could have done wrong unless you're kind of really big brain looking the future on a couple of guys, which I think is just completely unfair to say that you marketing is going to get shut down again and some of the things are going to happen with some of these other guys. Because, yeah, you know, marketing misses Jackson Jr., the awful, who was kind of not that great this season. We'll go into it, but getting traded to Utah and then just kind of getting shut down was awful. Underrated injury to Shaedon Sharpe, who just kind of misses the last month or so for him. Watson, who has been huge, especially when Jokic was out, kind of misses. Aldama, who I really rated drafting, kind of just was questionable in that playoff matchup against me. As far as, you know, after missing 20 games or so, named in the starting lineup, this is going to come back, you know, off the injury report, going to play, and then a late scratch, like, you know, 20 minutes before the game, and then doesn't play again that season. Like, I don't know, re-injures himself kind of in warm-ups and then just it's done. Like, that was a real rough one. And the inspiration for his name, you know, the obituary is Obi Toppin misses basically the season after being interesting and showing kind of glimpses as a late interesting pick. So we'll go through it all. But I think he drafted pretty well. But then the trades, upgrading Gobert and Powell to Paolo, I mean, there's a real discussion on who win it. I was a big fan of it for both teams. I think Powell and Gobert were really, really good for Dobes kind of coming back. And Paolo was injured and needed to do something. But Paolo was just that X factor, I think, that like come playoffs, this is a guy that kind of leads you to areas. And he had a kind of a track record last season where he was doing that in big games. So I was a big fan of kind of buying low on Paolo, and I think it kind of came through in big moments at least a little bit. We saw that Gobert, I think, again, just being a big part of stuff. So I think if anything, you say, well, Gobert's a better fantasy player than maybe he kind of gets spoke to it a little bit. So it's a big price, but I was really happy with that. And I think the Pods and Queen upgrade for Ingram was just kind of smart basketball to trade what ended up being free agency money as well. And two guys who were interesting, like Derek Queen kind of fell off a little bit, but at the time you were kind of selling high on his role. Pods, who, you know, Golden State were going through some shit, and he was an interesting look in with, you know, Butler going out. Like turning to two guys like that where, you know, there's a little bit of a who knows where they're going, but I'm going to sell high and turning him to someone sold like Ingram. Again, it's just like good fantasy basketball. So I think overall, he couldn't do much more right. And it's just a pity that like it was a dead man walking by the time it kind of came to the end. Just kind of got a bit brushed to the side. But we look at his drafting now, like Cade Cunningham. I had him at 8. I said this was the right pick. I think we've seen it was the right pick. I think he goes similar areas next year, if not even one or two higher. Like this is just like he's that next bracket after the elite guys, an average, you know, just 30, let's get it up, 31.6. So just, you know, there's really few players that are doing, you know, that average of 30 these days. You know, there's about 15 of them. And, you know, that includes an Anthony Davis and a Joel Embiid pushing these numbers. So, you know, Cade ends up being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th on your average. Misses with the punctured lung. You know, obviously that was huge in the playoffs as well. I think maybe that was either right at the end of Adam or just after. So I think there's a comfort in he's like, oh, well, I lost, but Kay went down as well going under a bit. Yeah, I just think he's kind of, I liked it at the time. It wasn't a home run kind of pick. I think that me and Adam and I don't know how many other coaches were taking him in the top 10. Maybe they weren't. I think it wasn't just a straightforward pick there. So I think he's done good to bet on him and come away with that. I think his next pick, Jaylen Brown, I had real issues with and I take loss on. We've already heard about, you know, Jaylen Brown. He was, you know, one of the other 14 that averages 30 this year. I had a hard time coming to terms with how much better fantasy-wise he's going to be even with the role, but I think that was kind of proven wrong. Excellent pick here at pick 13. He's done really well. Jaylen Brown was that guy. He's kind of just the scoring in particular, but, you know, leading Boston to the season they had without Tatum, doing it all. He identified that one, and I was a bit sketchy on taking him above some few other guys that I felt better about, but no, he was much better than a Pascal Siakam, a Devin Booker, a Trae Young, who were guys that all went after him who I thought maybe should have gone before. So, yeah, really, really smart drafting there that made me look a little bit silly on that one, which is good. I'm happy fine with that. Jalen Brunson, I liked it at the time. I had him about, I think, 18 on my board. I was tossing up him with my, you know, pick at 2021. I think the only reason why I don't take him there is because of just like a Knicks thing and not wanting to watch him too much. But he was the right pick. Should have gone earlier. Adam's happy to catch in, like an average of 27, to plays all the games. You know, there's three picks in a row, which I think, you know, you can say Brunson's an easy pick for him, but I think Cade wasn't an easy pick. Jaylen wasn't an easy pick, and he really smashed them. And then to add Brunson here was amazing. And then again, not a big of a risk next with Zion at pick 33, but, you know, Zion played his most healthy game that he's had in a long, long time. I guess the thing is that, you know, he averages at 26.2. And if you would have told me that, you know, Zion basically plays, you know, 70 games or whatever it was, you would think, you know, it's like, oh, well, he has a capability of that average should be like a 28 plus. I think you can't complain. I think it's just a good pick adding him, but it is interesting if the thought process on draft night is like, well, this is a risk, but if he does play this, oh, wow, I'm going to get like top 20 value. And that just didn't happen. So again, I'm interested kind of, is it just like, well, let's roll it back next year for the Pelicans? It feels like they've got decisions to make and maybe they'll wait and see with some of kind of the draft stuff. You know, they don't have their first round pick, but there's other things that I think they can definitely do. And whether they reckon, you know, Queen and Zion is just a hard kind of way to play. The Derek Queen one's going to be interesting because fantasy-wise it looks really good, but I think analytics, if you got a guy like Queen playing the way he does, and it's a bit selfish, it would probably be the knock on it with some of the things, or how can we put together an offense around him? And defense, I think, is going to be a struggle regardless. So getting back to Zion, I think it's a good, like, you come out saying, like, pass mark, but it's interesting if his team was going to be even better, like, you'd hope that Zion pick was going to really kind of pay off, but you just can't complain, I think, with the games played. Jaren Jackson Jr. really quickly hurt him. His average of 22.7 was, you know, an 18, I think, for the first kind of month before it kind of kicked up a little bit. And, you know, he goes to Utah and is kind of quickly shut down. It becomes a big mess. It's a big, big hole. It really hurts you. It's probably the worst pick, and that's probably unfair on a few reasons. But it just, it's the one that stands out that really kind of hurts. Larry Markkanen, I mean, he's nailed it in position-wise. His average of 29, you know, puts him at like 15th, 16th average. He was kind of a bit of the game changer at the start because guys are worried about him Last season, he had this real big dip in production. I think got traded a couple of times because people were just trying to move on from him, and some people still kind of saw the value. But I think it was smart drafting here. He's taken him knowing that, you know, this average of 29 was basically what he did 2 years ago when he was an All-NBA guy. And I just, it's hard to kind of foresee some of the kind of shutdown shenanigans that they do again. And they position themselves next year that I think it's just like, well, they can't be doing this again. and I think that was some of the thought. So I think it's just really unlucky. You know, your picks 5 and 6 who have gone in different directions. You know, one's been really below what you're expecting. One's kind of shooting for the stars, elevating themselves. But they both account for zero in the end because they both just don't play for you. So when you're talking about a third of your, you know, first 6 players picked, it's just, it's really hard to overcome, I think, in the big moments. But, you know, Rudy Gobert was a really smart pick. You know, the fact that he went to 68 is a bit interesting. I wonder where we revise that next year, because I remember his whole thing was he was kind of rough last year at the start, but really came home strong, especially in playoffs for Chris. Really was his best player, I think, in the grand final potentially, and not on many games. So I think that, you know, he slipped here. You got him an average of 24.7, you know, puts him just outside the top 50. But a solid, a guy that plays high ceiling, you know, I think that was good drafting. And to turn, you know, around 7 and wherever he took Norman Powell, around 10. So around 7 and around 10 player into around 2, you know, by that math, it's just good fantasy basketball. Round 8, Shaden Sharp, I said at the time it was early, and it probably still is early, but I think it was a fun risk guy that I like, obviously, that I've gone. I thought, you know, he started off slow, and I remember because I was trying to kind of maybe potentially trade for him, but came back into it. Was a big piece, I think, of Portland's success in like the middle, you know, of the season, kind of overshadowed by a few guys, Denny being one of them, and even Holiday at the start of the season, who was doing really good. But it was just funny because it was like, well, I think Scoot and Shaden Sharp, do they start at all? And then Scoot's hurt, and then Shaden Sharp, you know, does start, but then, you know, it's in or out, ends up hurting at the end of the season. His average of 20, you know, puts him at, again, like that 100 kind of best player. Average-wise, you've taken him at 73. So I think it's early in the end of it, but I don't kind of hate it. It's more that he's, like, injured at the end of it, which really kind of hurts you. I don't mind going those guys. I was just interested where someone would have taken him if you didn't take him here. But it's one of those ones where I would never want to bash a coach of, like, I want this guy. I think there's a leap. Like, this is the price because I'm not sure if I'm going to get him coming back. I'm fine with that. Anthony Simons, I hated the pick at the time, and it ends up being a real kind of shit heap of a pick. I understand the logic with the Boston stuff. But yeah, drafted, dropped, picked up by Dan, dropped, picked up by Jake, dropped, picked up by Jake. He did the rounds. And everyone, I think, picked him up and dropped him pretty quickly. He didn't stick with teams at all. At best, he did was a little bit less than a month. But a couple of times, you know, only on the roster for a few days. Not a good one there. But Norman Powell, kind of just really smart drafting to get him here and package him up. You know, averages 21.7. Just good areas in Miami Heat. I think the Malik Monk one was a miss, but it's fine. I thought the Santani Aldama pick was really smart. I thought, oh, I had him, I'm like, this is the year. Didn't really happen as much as I was hoping. But, you know, still an average of 20, you know, basically, again, for a pick 113, sorry. You know, there's a smart pick. It just, again, just couldn't get on the court at the end. VJ Edgecombe's his best pick. I mean, the rookie thing was so interesting. We talked about Ace Bailey being like the second one coming on the rankings coming through, but VJ Edgecombe, obviously Colin Knuppel, Colin Murray Boyles, who got drafted and was very, very good, you know, towards the end of the season. you know, these were all rookies that kind of not just like stuck on lists, but became big parts of them. And VJ Edgecombe to get drafted here at 128 and to pop out an average of 21.1, that, you know, puts him roughly, you know, that 90th kind of best average guy. It's huge. And he played minutes, played games, healthy, young legs, like huge. His total points would probably be a lot higher as well, if we can kind of quickly look at it. But big fan of that one. And we saw it from the very start of the season. So he's bang on the 50th best player on total points. So huge win on that one. But yeah, he had over 20 shots coming off the bench in his first game. And just that was just a taste of what was to come. So huge pick, his best pick for sure there. Nailed it. Obi Toppin, I think, what could have been fair risk there. And Jason Tatum, which played out almost perfectly for him. It just, the whole idea was like, well, hang on, can I carry this guy all season and see? And, you know, I didn't expect to see him. I was like, if anything, you know, fantasy season's going to be over. But he came back just in time, I think, to have a few games on his belt and like, oh, here we go, can be a real force. Because even if he misses a couple of games through maintenance or his minutes aren't up, the fact that you're adding a Jason Tatum, who, you know, is a late first rounder, mid, like, at least, like, he's, that's the quality of him when he's fully fit, to kind of just pop into a rotation, pop into a team that finished second on the ladder moving playoffs, was really solid kind of stuff. Exactly what he was been hoping for when you take someone like Jason Tatum here that you can carry. It's just a shame that all the rest of the team had fell apart around him. But I just think, and I've taken a little bit of time now, I think, to break down the team, but to kind of do that all, you know, have the drafting where he's added Edgecombe, which is his best pick. I think, you know, a couple have let him down, but whether it's Simons or Jaren Jackson being his worst, his surprise of kind of Zion actually playing, you know, added to everything with his free agents that I kind of listed, was just like, you could see why he was had such a good regular season and was in there as a threat for the championship. But I just don't think, you know, when you're looking at Markin and Jackson, Aldama, Watson, Sharp, kind of all out, and even there was other guys, I know you're not relying on like Jaden Smith as much, but it was like a collective outs, the guys that he's brought in. Like, and it's dated now, but he's had Brandon Williams, who's on his IR. He's got Gigi Jackson, who, you know, he picked up and then missed games. Jalen Smith, as I just said. These are all added to his kind of big injury ones that really sucked. So Sadiq Bey was a guy who missed a couple games late as well. Yeah, just timing-wise kind of tore it apart from him. So I think that's just an unfortunate one. But overall, great team. We'll see where he can go next year. Lock in for draft, because I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, some other guys maybe get their chance at it all. So yeah, that's it for another podcast. I'm gonna tune off, get some work done, and watch some Detroit versus Cleveland basketball, which will be fun. But yeah, got another couple of these to do when I can. For the four teams left, which I think I had Jake, MJ, and then whoever else is left, because I've done Dobes. I've got Jake, MJ, Princey, and Lukey's still to go. So, yeah, those will be fun as well. So stay tuned if you're still interested in listening to those two, and I'll get them out when I can. Love to you all. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon. Later, boys.